Welcome to Orphans No More, a radio extension of Justice for Orphans Ministry, a program dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, advocating Christian families to adopt and get involved with foster care here in the Capital District, as well as globally, and encouraging and supporting those who've heard and heeded the call of James 1:27.
1 Corinthians 16:14 says, "Do everything in love." This is Orphans No More, a media extension of Justice for Orphans Ministry. I'm your host, Sandra Flack. Our guest joining us today from Indiana is Rena Vauder. Rena is an open, domestic, infant, transracial, adoptive mom. And that's no small feat there, even to just say all of that. So welcome to the show, Rena.
Thank you.
So you and your husband, Chad, have five adopted children. And let me see if I can get their ages right. You have a 12-year-old son, a 10-year-old daughter, another son who's 9, another daughter who's 8, and your youngest, a 2-year-old son.
Correct.
You are a busy mom.
Yes, I am.
So what led you and Chad to choose adoption?
Yeah, it was a dream of mine ever since I was little. It was just, I truly believe it was just how God made me. That was before I even really knew what adoption was. That's the way my heart, that's where my heart was leaning. So it started very, very young. I grew up begging my parents to adopt a sibling, and they didn't, but I went on to college where I went on a mission trip, a short-term mission trip to Haiti, and that kind of solidified my desires, and I knew that that's what God had for me.
Wow. And now, you shared this information with your husband, I assume.
I did. We definitely had that conversation before we got married, and he knew, and he was on board, and he's easy like that. He's good.
Wow. All right. So then you adopted domestically. What led you in that direction? What made you decide to pursue domestic adoption?
Yeah, God surprised me. I was sure that that I would adopt from Haiti, I think stemming from my trip there. But we had been praying about it, and we had been matched with a birth mom through an attorney in Arizona. She actually lived in the Marshall Islands, and we'd gone through several months of being matched with her and planning for her arrival, all of those things. And there came to be this door that got closed, and it closed very suddenly, very quickly, very close to a due date. So we were pretty heartbroken, and I think it was that heartbreak that took us to the point that we were like, okay, hands off for us. We're going to stop planning, and we're just going to let it fall as God desires. And his desire was domestic. So that's that's just how it came to be.
Wow. So tell us about how your agency that you were using actually kind of approached you about transracial adoption.
Yeah, we had done our home study through an agency, and they had called us probably about 4 to 5 months after that first match had fallen through. And they just said, hey, we know where your hearts are. We know that you are open to transracial adoption. And we have so many moms in here who we don't have families to match with. And we'd really like you to consider using our program. Would you consider it? And that was a Friday. And I said, well, let me talk to my husband. We'll pray about it over the weekend, and we can let you know next week. And we knew pretty quickly into the weekend that, you know, we would be okay with that, that would could be something that where God wanted us. And on Monday, we didn't even get a chance to call them. They called us very early Monday morning, and a baby boy had been born on Saturday, and he was ready to be dismissed from the hospital. And so we literally drove 2 hours picked them up and drove 2 hours back home.
Wow.
All in one day.
Well, of course, you already had your home study done, so all the paperwork was in order.
It was done, yep.
But from call to pickup, that was pretty quick.
Yes, it was pretty quick.
Wow.
And I think that heartbreak just had to happen for us to be open to just a completely different plan than what I had in my head, because I had international adoption in my head.
Yeah. Sometimes we have to lay down what we want.
We sure do.
Yeah, for sure. And now that was just the beginning. That was back in 2005. And you adopted 4 children in 4 years.
We did.
And then after a 6-year gap, you brought home your youngest little guy, who's now 2. So your adoptions are what we call open, which means there could be some contact with the children's biological parents. What has been your experience with open adoption? Because a lot of people hear that and they're afraid of that.
Yeah, we were afraid of that in the beginning. You know, it's scary to think about trying to share a child, if you will, with someone else. It's scary to think, you know, will they want the child back? You know, there's so many, the fears are endless there. But God has been good. It's been a learning experience. Some of our kids do have this open adoption. Some of them do not by our choice, but it just hasn't happened yet. And so that piece is hard, too, that some of them have to watch their other siblings having relationships with their first families and be able to ask the questions that they have. And so that's hard, too. But I would say that a big part of having an open adoption is the surrendering that you have to do to your own fears, because it's not about us. It's definitely about our kids being parents. You know, all parenting is about what's best for the kids, not necessarily what parents want or need. And this is exactly the same thing. It's not about us. It's about what's best for our kids and what our kids need. And I think having that openness, that availability to ask their questions, to get their answers all through life is such a gift, such a gift.
Mm.
And then just being able to see someone who might look like you, who might share your eyes, that's something I think we probably take for granted. Not being adopted, I'm not adopted, but you know, for my kids to have that experience, I think is important, and to know where they came from, and ultimately to know that they are loved. It wasn't my parents gave me up. It was my parents made this choice for me because it was best. And that can shift a whole lot going on in the kids' hearts.
Yeah. So now, in addition to the open adoption part, your adoptions are also transracial. So what challenges has your family faced so far being a transracial family?
Yeah. I would say, you know, we don't know what we don't know. Mm-hmm. And I would say that's the biggest thing for us in transracial adoption is we are learning how much we don't know. It can be heartbreaking to realize my kids could walk into a room and be judged, or a joke could be thrown simply because of their skin tone. You know, I've never had to experience that in my life in my little section of America. But realizing that is truth of what they could possibly face is heartbreaking, and it's hard to know how to prepare them for that. It's hard to know how to help them overcome that other than pointing them towards Christ is ultimately the only thing that we can do as parents.
Mm. So do you talk with your children about that?
We do. My oldest, he's 12 and a half, and he is taller than me now. He's a very tall sixth grader. He's definitely, you know, changed out of that little boy look. He's looking more like a black man instead of a black boy. And we're seeing how that can kind of change some people's, just the way they even watch us. It's changed. It used to be, oh, they're so cute. And it's definitely changed. And it's a hard line of knowing how to walk it with your kids and what exactly to say. Okay, this could be race related, or this could be adoption related, or this could be just a kid, you know, related to just being a kid and figuring out who you are in those teenage years. It's so hard. It's so hard. And we don't have answers. We just pray that God will guide us and he will help us to know how to walk our kids through what it is that they may face.
So you're just relying on the Lord to really kind of help you navigate those waters.
We are.
Are there resources? Do you have other people that you talk to or books that you've read? Or
the adoption world is great. There's so many resources available. And even little things such as doing hair. I spend a lot of time on my daughter's hair. It's something that I know is important to in the Black culture, and so it is important to me to have her presentable and take good care of her hair and have it healthy and have it styled neatly and nicely. So things like that. I mean, but there are resources, all kinds of resources available, and that's a huge gift. That really, if it's hair, if it's skin, if it's even the deeper issues of being a transracial family, there's God's resources out there, which is awesome.
Oh, wonderful. Let me just remind our listeners, this is Orphans No More, a radio extension, a media extension of Justice for Orphans Ministry. To learn more about adoption, foster care, and orphan care ministry, you can visit our website at justicefororphansny.org. I'm your host, Sandra Flack, and our guest today is open domestic infant transracial adoptive mom, Rena Vauder. Now, Rita, we've talked a little bit about open adoption and transracial adoption, but what are the challenges that you faced just parenting adopted children in general? Because parenting adopted children can be very different than parenting biological children, and like you said earlier, sometimes you have to kind of figure out with what's going on. Is this because because it's an open adoption, or because it's just because they're adopted, or is it just because they're a kid going through a thing? So what have you faced with the adoption piece?
Let me just start by saying it is definitely the circumstances that add the challenges. It is not the child. And I always want that to be a clear division. these kids are, nothing but blessings to us. But the circumstances of the way that they came to us or the way that their lives began can definitely add challenges to parenting and to them for growing up. It's heartbreaking to try to walk our kids through some of the traumatic pieces of their first family stories, stories that happened before they were born, and sometimes possibly stories that are continuing to happen after they are growing up. And that's not an easy thing to try to share with your kids when there's some really hard private pieces that you need to share with them, and you're not sure when to share, and you're not sure how to share. And so that's definitely one of the biggest challenges, I would say, that we have.
Wow. And then what about, like, I know you and I had talked about this previously, but about just really respecting their story and respecting birth parents who often really get a bad rap.
Absolutely. That's something that God has just really put on my heart is, my kids have stories that for some reason people like to hear. They want to know the details behind, why are they with you? And what are the details about their first families? And thankfully, I learned pretty quickly that those details are not mine to share. those are private details about my kids, but also about their families. So every time I'm sharing something about the way the kids came to us, that is private and hard, that's also exposing, if you will, their first family's mistakes. And gosh, I would never want all my mistakes just aired out as dirty laundry. I've got plenty, and thankfully I don't have somebody else sharing them for me. So that's important to me, that my kids know that it's their story to tell, not mine. And I do like to get their permission if I need to share pieces with, maybe it's somebody who's considering adoption, or maybe it's somebody who's asked me a specific question. I do want the kids' permission. It's hard for a few of them to give that permission when they're so young yet, but my oldest is definitely getting to the point where he can process, okay, I don't think I really would rather you talk about that, or... and I just think it's a good thing to ask them. I think it's I think it's a sign of respect to them, yes, and a sign of respect to their first family. I want my kids to know I do respect their first families. I don't want to talk badly about them. I don't want to share bad things about them. I do respect them, and they're a part of my kids. So, therefore, they have my heart.
Mm. Important lessons to learn. So you've been on this journey for nearly 13 years.
Yeah.
What else has God taught you over this time, you know, with adoptive parenting?
Yeah. A big one is just the amount of loss that happens in adoption. As much as I want to just focus on the celebration part, that, oh, it's awesome. And I do. I wouldn't trade my kids for the world. They are a reason to celebrate. But also just allowing them room and space, if they need it, to grieve what they've lost. Mm. You know, that wasn't... Unfortunately, adoption is a thing that needs to happen and be available. But that doesn't mean that their hearts understand it. And it doesn't mean that their hearts don't have to miss what could have been.
Right, because it's sort of this bittersweet thing. Like you said, adoptive parents can celebrate and rejoice, you know, especially mm-hmm. when an adoption is finalized. Mm-hmm. But on one hand, where there's joy and celebration, on the other hand, that only happened because of a huge loss that took place.
It sure did.
Yeah.
And you know, those kids may experience that grief on a day that you very least expect it. That's been most of the cases in with my kids. But, you know, it might also be on holidays. It might mm-hmm. be on Mother's Day. It might, and, you know, I want to think, oh, Mother's Day is all about me. It's really not. They do have another mom that they could very well be thinking about on that day. And if I just give them the space, it's a lot about checking my own expectations, being careful that I don't go into things expecting it to be about me, because again, as a parent, it's not about us. It's about them and what they need. And if they need that space to grieve, then I'm going to grieve with them.
Yeah, it's really acknowledging their feelings and allowing them to process through that.
Yes, it is.
Wow. So switching gears a little bit, you are an adoptive mom, but like a lot of us adoptive moms, you're also an Orphan Sunday coordinator there in Indiana. What are some of the ways that your church has observed Orphan Sunday over the years?
Yeah, our church has done a variety of things. On Orphan Sunday could look something very simple as a video shown during service. But we've also done some bigger things, too. We've had years where we, just in our big fellowship hall, we have different representatives from different organizations all come and be present for an hour or two, where members from our congregation can just walk through and pick up information if they want to learn more, or ask questions if they want to learn more. We try to get representatives from every realm We try to have child sponsorship. We try to have domestic adoption. We try to have international adoption. We try to have somebody, like a social worker from DCS, come and be present as well. A CASA worker, you know, a case-appointed representative for the child. That's also a way that people can get involved. So we just try to have every realm that we could think of ways to support either the adoptive family, foster family, or actually reaching out to a child.
I always love to talk about Orphan Sunday because Orphan Sunday, for our listeners who might not know, is a day for the church to come together with one voice on that one day for one purpose, and that is to really stand for the fatherless, the orphan, the foster child, vulnerable children. And it's the second Sunday of November annually. So we encourage listeners to get that on your church calendar, of course. But it's that opportunity to get the conversation started in your congregation where you can talk about adoption and you can talk about foster care and the need and all the different ways that people can step up and meet those needs. So and really it was through Orphan Sunday that my organization, Justice for Orphans, was established. It came about as a result of an Orphan Sunday service that our church did. So it's a great platform to, like I said, to get the conversation started, and you can do little things to big things, whatever really, wherever you want to start, whatever you want to do to get the kind of get the conversation rolling, and really it begins to make a difference. So I appreciate what you're doing there, Rena, with Orphan Sunday. So as we wrap up today, what is on your heart that you really want to be sure that our listeners hear?
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing is just that, just like the verse from 1 Corinthians, this is all just centered around love. It's not just loving your kids. It's loving every part of them, and that does include their first family. We just, so many times, I think we are viewed as these saviors who rescue these kids, and well, I don't want to say that's completely untrue, because some of these kids do need rescuing out of desperate situations, but it is always our opportunity to offer Jesus, and it's Jesus that does the rescuing. It's just that we're blessed with the opportunity to offer him to them. Maybe they're coming to us from desolate places where they wouldn't otherwise be offered Jesus. Maybe they're coming from an inner city family who otherwise wouldn't be introduced to Jesus. We don't know, but we do know that every adoption of ours and also their first families, the ones that we have contact to, it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to love them and to love them well, through their mistakes, through our mistakes, because none of us is going to get it right. It's just, if we can so center around the love piece and making it so much less about ourselves, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And I've heard people say, and oftentimes it's not the adoptive parents, but just people who, you know, are observing from the sidelines,
absolutely,
so to speak,
yep.
You know, like, you know, we get praised for, oh, you've done such a wonderful thing for this child.
Yep.
And then there's also like this expectation that the children need to be like grateful and thankful to us.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's true. There is. And that's a sad expectation to have. It's not really fair. You know, they, like I said, they have a whole lot to grieve.
Yeah.
So to then expect them to be thankful, it's just not okay. That's making it more. If I'm going to expect my kids to be thankful, I'm making it more about myself than I am making it about them.
Yeah,
so I need to be super careful there.
And that's really like looking through, like that might make sense, expecting a kid to be thankful. That might make sense if it's a biological child, but when they're what we call kids from hard places, who've experienced loss and who've experienced trauma, you know, and like you said, Rena, they're, you know, they're coming in grieving, you know, what is there to be thankful about, really? And just that whole concept of, you know, well, you've been rescued and now you're, you know, in a family. It's just, it's misunderstood. It's, you know, people just don't really understand what is really going on and how difficult it can really be. And, you know, those are not correct expectations.
No, they're not. That's hard. That's a hard situation to put a kid in who wants to grieve, who needs to grieve,
yeah,
but isn't allowed to grieve. That's doing them a big injustice to not allow that space.
Right. Oh, I hear you. I agree with you. Mm-hmm. And I just thank you for coming on today and sharing your story and sharing your heart with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It was a pleasure. And I want to thank also you, our listeners, for listening to this episode of Orphans No More. You can find more shows on our website at justicefororphansny.org and as our podcast, which can be found on iTunes, Google Play, and Podbean. Just search for the name of the show, which is Orphans No More. I am your host, Sandra Flack, Executive Director of Justice for Orphans Ministry. Our mission is to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless. We seek to inspire, educate, and equip the body of Christ to walk out James 1:27 by adoption, foster care, and orphan care ministry. So again, to learn more or to contact me about speaking at your church or event, go to our website at justicefororphansny.org.
Thank you for supporting this program by listening today, sharing what you've heard, and praying for orphans and children in need everywhere. More information is available at justicefororphansny.org. Visit and discover how you can make a difference in a child's life. And be sure to tune in to Orphans No More next Friday.